Chapter 46. Which, he went on himself. I haven't an exaggerated opinion of myself, so I know I ain't bragging when I say I'll make a pretty good husband. You'd find I was no hand at nagging and fault-finding. I can guess what it must be for a woman like you to be independent. Well, you'd be independent as my wife. No strings on you. You could follow your own sweet will, and nothing would be too good for you. I'd give you everything your heart desired, except yourself, she interrupted suddenly, almost sharply. Daylight's astonishment was momentary. I don't know about that. I'd be straight and square, and live true. I don't hanker after divided affections. I don't mean that, she said. Instead of giving yourself to your wife, you would give yourself to the 300,000 people of Oakland, to your street railways and ferry routes, to the 2 million trees on the hills, to everything business and to all that means. I'd see that I didn't, he declared stoutly. D be yours to command. You think so, but it would turn out differently. She suddenly became nervous. He must stop this talk. It is too much like attempting to drive a bargain. How much will you give? Apostrophe I'll give so much. Apostrophe I want more, apostrophe and all that. I like you, but not enough to marry you, and I'll never like you enough to marry you. How do you know that? He demanded. Because I like you less and less. Daylight sat dumbfounded. The hurt showed itself plainly in his face. Oh, you don't understand, she cried wildly, beginning to lose self-control. Tease not that way, I mean. I do like you. The more I've known you, the more I've liked you. And at the same time, the more I've known you, the less would I care to marry you. This enigmatic utterance completed Daylight's perplexity. Don't you see, she hurried on. Could have far easier married the Elam Harnish fresh from Klondike, when I first laid eyes on him long ago, than marry you sitting before me now. He shook his head slowly. Hat's one too many for me. The more you know, and like a man, the less you want to marry him. Familiarity breeds contempt, I guess that's what you mean. No, no, she cried, but before she could continue, a knock came on the door. The 10 minutes is up, Daylight said. His eyes, quick with observation like an Indian's, darted about the room while she was out. The impression of warmth and comfort and beauty predominated, though he was unable to analyze it. While the simplicity delighted him, expensive simplicity, he decided, and most of it leftovers from the time her father went broke and died. He had never before appreciated a plain hardwood floor with a couple of wolfskins. It sure beat all the carpets in creation. He stared solemnly at a bookcase containing a couple of 100 books. There was mystery. He could not understand what people found so much to write about. Writing things and reading things were not the same as doing things, and himself primarily a man of action, doing things was alone comprehensible. His gaze passed on from the crouched Venus to a little tea table with all its fragile and exquisite accessories, and to a shining copper kettle and copper chafing dish. Chafing dishes were not unknown to him, and he wondered if she concocted suppers on this one for some of those university young men he had heard whispers about. One or two watercolors on the wall made him conjecture that she had painted them herself. There were photographs of horses, and of old masters, and the trailing purple of a burial of Christ held him for a time. But ever his gaze returned to that crouched Venus on the piano. To his homely, frontier-trained mind, it seemed curious that a nice young woman should have such a bold, if not sinful, object on display in her own room. But he reconciled himself to it by an act of faith. Since it was deed, it must be eminently all right. Evidently such things went along with culture. Larry Hagan had similar casts and photographs in his book-cluttered quarters. But then, Larry Hagan was different. There was that hint of unhealth about him that Daylight invariably sensed in his presence, while Deed, on the contrary, seemed always so robustly wholesome, radiating an atmosphere compounded of the sun, and wind and dust of the open road. And yet, if such a clean healthy woman as she went in for naked women crouching on her piano, it must be all right. Deed made it all right. She could come pretty close to making anything all right. Besides, he didn't understand culture anyway. She re-entered the room, and as she crossed it to her chair, he admired the way she walked, while the bronze slippers were maddening. "I'd like to ask you several questions," he began immediately. "Are you thinking of marrying somebody?" She laughed merrily, and shook her head. "Do you like anybody else more than you like me? That man at the phone just now, for instance?" "There isn't anybody else. I don't know anybody I like well enough to marry. For that matter, I don't think I am a marrying woman. Office work seems to spoil one for that." Daylight ran his eyes over her, from her face to the tip of a bronze slipper, in a way that made the color mantle in her cheeks. At the same time, he shook his head skeptically. "It strikes me that you're the most marryingest woman that ever made a man sit up and take notice. And now another question. You see, I've just got to locate the lay of the land. Is there anybody you like as much as you like me?" But Deed had herself well in hand. "That's unfair," she said. "And if you stop and consider, you will find that you are doing the very thing you disclaimed, namely, nagging. I refuse to answer any more of your questions. Let us talk about other things. How is Bob?" Half an hour later, whirling along through the rain on Telegraph Avenue toward Oakland, Daylight smoked one of his brown paper cigarettes and reviewed what had taken place. "It was not at all bad," was his summing up, though there was much about it that was baffling. There was that liking him the more she knew him, and at the same time wanting to marry him less. That was a puzzler. But the fact that she had refused him carried with it a certain elation. In refusing him, he had refused his $30 million. That was going some for a $90 a month stenographer who had known better ties. She wasn't after money, that was patent. Every woman he had encountered had seemed willing to swallow him down for the sake of his money. Why, he had doubled his fortune, made 15 millions, since the day she first came to work for him, and behold, any willingness to marry him she might have possessed had diminished as his money had increased. "Gosh," he muttered. "If I clean up $100 million on this land deal, she won't even be on speaking terms with me." But he could not smile the thing away. It remained to baffle him, that enigmatic statement of hers, that she could more easily have married the Elam Harnish fresh from the Klondike than the present Elam Harnish. Well, he concluded, the thing to do was for him to become more like that old-time Daylight who had come down out of the north, to try his luck at the bigger game. But that was impossible. He could not set back the flight of time. Wishing wouldn't do it, and there was no other way. He might as well wish himself a boy again. Another satisfaction he cuddled to himself from their interview. He had heard of stenographers before, who refused their employers, and who invariably quit their positions immediately afterward. But Deed had not even hinted at such a thing. No matter how baffling she was, there was no nonsensical silliness about her. She was level-headed. But, also, he had been level-headed, and was partly responsible for this. He hadn't taken advantage of her in the office. True, he had twice overstepped the bounds, but he had not followed it up, and made a practice of it. She knew she could trust him. But in spite of all this, he was confident that most young women would have been silly enough to resign a position with a man they had turned down. And besides, after he had put it to her in the right light, he had not been silly over his sending her brother to Germany. "Gee," he concluded, as the car drew up before his hotel, "if I'd only known it as I do now, I'd have popped the question the first day she came to work. According to her say-so, that would have been the proper moment. She likes me more and more, and the more she likes me, the less she'd care to marry me. Now what do y'all think of that? She sure must be fooling. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.